Welcome back. I am Jim Rome, and I am in Southern California live in our SoCal-based studios where we have been throughout. It is so good to be here. Great to have you with us. Program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Phone lines are wide open, 1-800-636-8686. We start hour number two by having a conversation with the head football coach at the University of North Carolina. He is a two-time National Coach of the Year. He led Texas to a national championship. He's led two different programs to top five finishes. He is 10th all-time in FBS wins. He is a member of the National Football Foundation, College Football Hall of Fame. He led North Carolina to seven wins and their first bowl win since 2013 last season. Of course, I'm speaking of Mack Brown. Mack, it is so good to have you on. Before we get into all of this, Mack, how are you, Sally, and everybody around you right now?
Tim, we're all doing really well. We've talked about these crazy times, and, you know, you and I went through 9/11. I've been through the racial uprisings in the 60s with President Johnson, and I remember Mr. Meredith having to have escorts going to college at Ole Miss, and I remember Selma, and I remember Dr. King getting shot. I remember John Kennedy getting shot. So we've had a lot of this in our background, but for our young people, it's so important for us to show guidance and great leadership during this time, because you've got the pandemic, and then on top of that, we've got a real crisis economically and social economically with people getting sick on top of that, and then you add the racial injustice we've seen lately. So it's a time where leaders need to step up and help change, but also help young people learn about these things and move forward, and hopefully it'll never happen in our country again.
It's so well said. Mack Brown is my guest. And so, Mack, having said all of that, I'm curious, how have you gone about dealing with the pandemic with your players, your staff, and your program, and everything else that's going on around the nation right now?
Jim, we're so lucky. We're very transparent with our team. There are no elephants in the room. So we talk about race all the time. We've talked about racial injustice, and the premise of our program is to be fair, be consistent, and do what you know is the right thing to do. And really, that's what America needs to do. That's what our world has to do. So what we've done is we have a black police chief named David Perry, who played football at Albany State. He was a quarterback, and he is a superstar. So we've had him on with our parents. We've had him on with our players at least twice, maybe three times, to talk about police forces across the country, to talk about the injustice that's happening, and protest, and talking about protests in Chapel Hill or Durham or Raleigh, and how our players could be involved in a peaceful way. How he feels like that our players should be involved. And really, I've asked him to address how the white guys on the team should feel. What should they say? How can they help, and what can they do? And that's been very productive. We're actually looking at right now ways to get our players to vote, to make sure they do in the future. And we're looking at ways that to be classy, but to make sure that we honor the change that we would like individually and as a team. And like I told the guys, I don't send out tweets until Jeremy Sharp, our director of communication, reads them. So I would expect them to do the same thing. You can express yourself, but do it in a professional way. Do it in a classy way, and don't do it under anger at somebody else and put yourself in a position where it may cost you an opportunity in the NFL, or it may cost you a job when you get out. On the pandemic side, we're really lucky, Jim, that we've got one of the stronger medical centers in the country. I think maybe Boston, San Francisco, and the Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill area, we've got such great doctors and research here. So they've guided us. We actually have players coming in for the first time tomorrow, and we had a meeting with the doctors and our parents. We had a meeting, two meetings with our doctors and our players, just to make sure that they understood everything that we were doing to ensure their safety on a return. And we've had our mental health people talk to them, because There's been a lot of mental health issues that have popped up over the last 3 months for people that normally don't feel that stress or anxiety or depression. And so we've encouraged our guys who are at a real susceptible time for suicide and for depression and poor decisions. We've really tried to make sure that they have people talking to them constantly, but they have help available so they can do that. So, and we wanted to make sure we weren't on the call with the doctors and our staff that's helping the reentry, because we wanted to make sure the parents and the players could ask any questions without coaches being there, feeling like it was pressure. And we've also tried to make sure that all of our staff, our coaches, and our players feel comfortable coming back, Jim. We will come back as a staff on Monday, but we've got some older staff members that I'm holding out for them to stay at home and still Zoom with all their meetings just till we make sure that all of our players are tested, all of our staff's tested, and that we don't have the virus around so somebody that's 75 or 70 would feel uncomfortable.
North Carolina head football coach Mac Brown is joining us. You know, Mac, you and I spoke last August, and I have to say, at that time, I was genuinely fired up to have you back on the program and to hear the passion you had for that program and the excitement you had for the season. Then you go out and you win 7 games. You blow Temple out in the bowl game. When you look back on last season, Mac, what kind of thoughts and memories do you have?
Jim, number one, it reinforces that I made the right decision to come back, because I loved my TV gig, but I had a void, and the void was these kids. And that's what's been so hard for me. I've been up and down emotionally for the last 3 months, because I came back to be around the kids. My wife, Sally, came back to be around the kids, and they weren't here. We've missed them. So that's a huge part of what we're doing now is mentoring kids, and we've been able to do it through Zoom, but it's just different. And it's not the same when you can't see their faces all the time and their reactions. And when you've got 120 kids on, they can't ask you the same questions they would if they can walk in your office. So I'm really looking forward to them getting back. But the other thing that happened, Jim, that's so exciting for us is that we open up and we beat South Carolina. And then we come back and we beat Miami. I'm not sure we were able to handle those two wins, so we didn't play well the next 2 weeks against Wake Forest and Appalachian, and then came back and had a chance to beat Clemson, but we lost 5 defensive starters after that, and we played okay, but I thought we were in a position where we could win 10 games and instead of the 7 that we had. But we ended up getting some guys back, playing a lot more depth, and I really like the way our team played the last 3 games. We were a really good team, and I think we could have played with about anybody.
We're talking to Mac Brown. Mac, let me ask you about your young quarterback, Sam Howell. He had an amazing season as a true freshman. You've said that he's got some Colt McCoy in him because of his accuracy. That, of course, is incredibly high praise. How do you explain what he did last year as a true freshman, and how good can he be?
I think he can be as good as anybody, Jim. He's got a real calmness about him. It's a calmness and a confidence. So he is a great leader without saying a whole lot. He competes so well every day. He played with a sore ankle. He played with a sore shoulder and a sore knee and didn't even miss a practice, never complained about anything. And he's the hardest worker on the team. He's over a 3.0 in his first year in college. He's on the all-academic team, so he's got it all, and you said it, he's very accurate. I've never seen a more accurate thrower than Colt McCoy. At one point, he was in the high 70s with his completion percentage, and the balls never hit the ground in practice, and I'm seeing those same things out of Sam. Now, we lost our backups last year at quarterback. We didn't have any experience, so we didn't let him run. I think the fact that he can run now, which he did in the bowl game, is really going to help his production for next year.
We're talking to Mac Brown for a few more moments. You know, Mac, maybe I'm reaching here. Tell me if I am. But a few weeks back, everybody was watching The Last Dance. Of course, you're coaching at Michael Jordan's alma mater, and you are a Jordan brand school. I mean, of course, he played basketball, and you're coaching football. But when you're recruiting, how much of a draw is Michael Jordan and that brand?
Jim, he's a huge draw. You know, Michael Jordan is Michael Jordan, and he's one of those we talk about is he the best ever? Well, if he's not, I think he is, then he's in that group of 2 or 3. and the fact that he's got his brand of shoes, and these kids love shoes. I'm even now I know what the Concords are, and I got my Jordans down. I'm wearing them every day. And
there you go.
It's important to these kids. And the fact that we had the Last Dance, I charged every one of our players and coaches to watch it. And the thing you come away with is there's never been anybody more competitive than Michael Jordan. And he's really helped us. We have a Jordan experience room with all the Jordans that have all the shoes since the start that are mounted so the kids can see them. We've got a great quote from Michael in that room that's really cool and important for all of our kids to see. And I was with him at the Gonzaga game last year, and I said, you let Florida wear your shoes? You let Oklahoma wear your shoes? You let Michigan wear your shoes? Why didn't you just let us wear them
right. And
nobody else? Michael's so competitive. He said, why don't you win some games? And then you start telling me what I need to be doing with my shoes. So I said, I got you, Michael. I'm in.
Wow. You got it, Mike. That's a great story. You know, Mac, finally, from the outside, it seems like there's so much buzz and momentum surrounding the program coming off of last season. I'm curious what it feels like to you on the inside. Is it something that you're feeling? And if so, how would you describe it?
Jim, it is. It's probably more of a buzz and better at this stage than I thought it could be. Number one, we sold out every game last year, and we were only one of seven teams to do that. And our season tickets, with this craziness about where are we going to have football, are we going to have a full season, who gets to come, we're already at 94% renewal for season tickets for next year, which is just absolutely crazy. Our recruiting, we're in the top five in most of the recruiting services, and we'll just keep getting better. There's some more great players out there that are wanting to come. And I think we've got a really good team coming back. We needed to develop depth in the spring, so our coaches are going to have to do a tremendous job of doing that in preseason because it hurt us because we're just not a very deep team yet. And I think we'll be good this year. I think people better grab and hold on in 2 years because I think we're about to be really good.
He is the head football coach at the University of North Carolina. Once again, a two-time National Coach of the Year. He won that national championship at Texas. Mac Brown, my guest. Mac, so good to get caught up. Again, I'm amazed at how quickly this thing is turning. I know you have work ahead of you, but I thought you had an amazing year. It's good to have you back on the show. I look forward to seeing the team once again when you get back out there, Mac.
Thanks, Jim. You've been a great friend for many years. And, Jim, let me thank again first responders who, through all of this stuff, have kept us afloat. And our healthcare people, they're just superstars and heroes, and I get emotional when I start talking about them. But I'm getting ready to go back to work. These people have had no choice, and they've been working since the beginning. We're all running from the virus. They've been fighting to keep it away from us. So God bless them, and may they stay safe.
I concur. Well said, Mac. Thank you so much. Mac Brown, our guest. All right, your thoughts, your reaction. North Carolina. It's amazing. When you understand what he came into and what he inherited, and you see what they did last year, it is nothing short of a miracle. It's miraculous. I knew that when Mac was all in, that when he went there, good things were going to happen. But those were really good things happening very quickly. And he said, look out in 2 years. All right, let's quickly go to the phones. We go to Chris in Toronto. Chris, you made it in. What's up?
Hey, Jim. What's up? Yo, I'd love to give props to NASCAR for finally banning the Confederate flag, but the Washington football team thinks you guys were taking your time with this. The phrase, better late than never, applies here, but it wasn't meant to be taken literally. Dude, long overdue. Washington, you're now on the clock. And again, I ask, why is this such a controversial thing? Hey, next, you're still able to be racist. They're just not letting you broadcast it on TV anymore. And speaking of cancel culture, Jim, did I see Paw Patrol trending last night? Look, I'm a black guy, and we've spoken on the show about what it's like for people who look like me being in positions of fear with the police department, but Paw Patrol? I mean, can we no longer watch Scooby-Doo because the ghosts wear white sheets? Even I think this is ridiculous. And finally, Jim, want to give a quick shout-out to little Alvy, who's had to work overtime putting together those montages of the smack-off callers. LeBron's Cleveland team he took to the first finals since Alvy has little to work with. Jim, give that guy a raise for having to put together packages for Cal and Dan and Vic and Jeff and Richmond, who's been making the same call for how many years now? You guys say that my calls are long, and yet his wars are the same length of my call. Anyway, Jim, speaking of RIP, I know personal appearance smack isn't show fodder, but RIP to your mentions after seeing the promos for that 30 for 30 Sunday featuring Count Chocula. Sammy, what is going on, my man? Where my boy Matt and Van holding down Team Canada? Out.
All right, Chris, thank you very much. He was bidding for a golden ticket. He is still without a golden ticket. Keep trying. You're not there yet, my man. It's for the best of the best. You're still on the watch list. I'm not going to lower the bar to the point where getting through a phone call without getting run gets you a golden ticket. We're not doing that. Are you good enough to show up the day of and make a difference? That's pretty much the barometer. Are you good enough to show up the day of and make a difference? That's the bar. My thanks to Mac Brown. All right, we'll break right now. I've got an open segment coming up next. After that, Bruce Feldman joins us. And then the third hour is wide open, and we are talking Smack Off then. Our Smack Off player profile today, the BIC. Top of the third. When your battery goes dead, everything could come to a halt. Don't take a chance on getting stranded. O'Reilly Auto Parts will test your battery free of charge. If your battery needs to be replaced, the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts can help you find the exact battery that fits your car or your truck at a guaranteed low price. So keep your car on the road by getting your battery tested for free at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Or when you need auto parts quickly, O'ReillyAuto.com is just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com. Pick up for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. They'll even bring it out to the curbside. Or, if you want, you can choose to have your parts delivered right to your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. Get your auto parts quickly with O'Reilly Auto Parts. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
Again, my thanks to Mac Brown and Bruce Feldman's coming up next segment. So quickly, let me duck this in. I mean, given the importance of what we're seeing around this country, what we're seeing in the streets, the worldwide reaction to the killing of George Floyd, I wanted to use my podcast platform to stay with that conversation as well. Because as much as the topic might be heavy and uncomfortable and not what you come here for, I'm not going to run from it. Because these are important conversations, and it's time to get comfortable being uncomfortable. So with that in mind, I brought on Nate Boyer, former long snapper and United States Army Green Beret. Nate, as you'll recall, entered the national conversation back in 2016 when Colin Kaepernick began his protest. Nate, at that time, wrote an open letter to Kaepernick explaining his feelings as a service member, while also admitting that he really had no idea what it was like to walk in Kaepernick's shoes. The open letter worked its way back to Kaepernick. He reached out to meet with Nate. And if you're not familiar with the story, this is Nate laying it out for our podcast.
He actually reached out to me and wanted to meet. So I went down to San Diego. It's military appreciation night. They've got a flyover, Navy SEALs jumping into the stadium. And Colin says he's not going to stand. So we talked for a good hour and a half. And then he asked me at the end of the conversation, do you think there's another way I can protest that won't offend people in the military? And I said, no. I said, no matter what you do, some people will be offended by it. It doesn't matter what you do. You know, it's just, that's just the way it's going to be. When I see you sitting on the bench isolated by yourself, it looks as though you're making it either about you or that you're kind of sitting this thing out and you don't really care. And I know after talking to you, that's not at all what you're about. So I said, I think the only other option, if you're committed to not standing, taking a knee, the only thing that probably doesn't look absolutely ridiculous. When people take a knee to pray, propose. When a player is hurt on the field, players take a knee out of respect. It's just never seen as a disrespectful act. And so he did. He thought it was more powerful, a better representation of what he was trying to do.
It's pretty interesting, right? Because when a lot of you see him take a knee, you think it's incredibly disrespectful. And Nate Boyer also made the point that I knew that when we did that, or when I suggested that, people would be unhappy. But he said the reason I did that was when I think about taking a knee, I think about people praying. I think about people proposing. I think about players on the field taking a knee when somebody else is hurt. I mean, these are all positive things. These are not disrespectful things. So that, in part, is one of the reasons why he said to him, instead of sitting for the anthem, maybe you take a knee. Because taking a knee does represent so many other positive things. Except, no matter what, not everybody's going to see it that way. I would say this. Some of the people who despised Kaepernick for his protest because they didn't fully understand what he was really protesting for are now admitting that they were wrong. They didn't understand. Nate Boyer said, until I sat with him and heard from him, I didn't fully understand. Boyer also said that Kaepernick's message, although it was important at that time, it is much more important now and will be going forward.
Even after I met with him, even after sitting down with him, having a conversation, even after a couple of years of that, I kept thinking, you know what, though? It's not Jackie Robinson. It's not Muhammad Ali. Like, that's different. Those are different times. You know, that's civil rights movement. That's fighting segregation. It's just different. I'm sorry, but Colin will never be on that Mount Rushmore. And I was wrong. I think that he will. I think that that gesture, not even anything he's really ever said, but just that gesture, stepping out on that ledge like that, I guarantee he had a lot of people telling him, this is not a good idea. And I had plenty of people reach out to me, Jim, people I greatly respect, some people in the media, some not, that said, dude, don't do that. Back away from the situation now before it's too late. Like, it's volatile. It's a bad idea. And now these people are wrapping their arms around him, embracing them, and calling out everybody that was upset with him at the time, you know, and said, like, how could we see this as disrespectful now? You know, and it's like, it's cool. It's really cool to see that, and good for him.
Because the two of them had that conversation. Like, that meeting between Nate Boyer and Colin Kaepernick was back in 2016. And that's what it looks like when a couple of people sit down to hear each other out. And both of them were better for it because both of them gained a perspective that they didn't previously have. Nate Boyer says, I understood him much better after I came together with him. And Kaepernick also had a different perspective after he sat down with Nate Boyer. And even though Nate loves the flag and respects it on a level that only a few will ever know, perhaps, he firmly believes that taking a knee in protest is not about the flag, and it's actually a great example of being patriotic.
That's what patriotism is. It's about loving your country so much, you'll do what you can to make it better. And I don't think Colin hates America. That's my opinion. I think he's disappointed in it, and it may come off that way to some people sometimes because, you know, of some of the things that he says. But from my interactions with him, and they're limited, but also so many of the other players in the league that either have knelt or have at least supported those players' decisions to do that, it is patriotic what they're trying to do, what the message is. It's about making this place better. It's about striving towards equality. It's about including practices in policing. I mean, that's one thing about these last couple of weeks. Millions of people that have never either taken the time or really had the opportunity to see some of the ugliness that needs to get fixed. Now we've seen it in the streets with the protests and just some of the lack of training, the lack of understanding, and also just some of the people that shouldn't be wearing that uniform.
You know, once again, his protest was never about the flag. It was never about the military. So Nate Boyer is not only defending the First Amendment right to freedom of speech and freedom to protest and expression, he's telling you that to protest in a manner like that actually is patriotic. And if somebody who risked his life for this country, buried his brothers in caskets, draped in the American flag, can see that and advocate for it, I wonder why we don't see it that way. Now, a lot of people listening don't want to have that conversation right here in the first place, because to them, sports and politics do not mix. Not here, not now. That's not why I come to you, Rome. You shouldn't even be talking about this. I put the question to Nate. Do sports and politics belong together? Do they mix?
When have they not? I mean, we look back on these people and the legends that remain with us forever. One of the ones that less talked about in these times is someone like Roberto Clemente. These people will be remembered forever, and it's so much less for what they did on the field. Maybe not Muhammad Ali, because he maybe was the greatest fighter of all time as well. What will we remember Jackie Robinson for? Not baseball, compared to what he did off the field. Well, I guess it was on the field in a sense. These are the people that will be remembered. I think that's just a crazy notion. I don't like the thought of anybody sticking to their profession. You know, oh, just Nate, stick to the military. That's what you did. That's all you know. That's who you are. Don't talk about anything else. Don't have an opinion or an emotion or a voice for those that can't be heard. Like that. Come on, that's ridiculous.
Right. Like, hey, Nate, stick to long snapping. Just stick to what you know. He's right. And some of the most iconic athletes will be remembered as much or more for what they did off of the field as compared to what they did on the field. And instead of waiting decades to come around on their messages, we should open up our minds and our ears and our hearts and listen. And listen to what somebody has to say if they've experienced something that you have not. In other words, once again, let's get it right. Let's do better. Episode 133 of the Jim Rome Podcast with Nate Boyer is live right now. It's on iTunes, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, jimrome.com. I've got it pinned to the top of my Twitter feed as well. I would encourage you to listen to that conversation and pass it around. I mean, maybe you won't agree with it, but open your mind, open your heart, listen to the conversation, and check that out. Still ahead, Bruce Feldman will be joining me next segment. And then after that, we got phone calls the rest of the way. Next hour, we're talking smack off. The player profile, the BIC, the GOAT, the guy to beat, Brad and Corona. I'm doing that in exactly a half hour from right now. 1-800-636-8686. Here's your bottom of the hour sports update.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
For the ones who get it done, there is Grainger, offering supplies and solutions for every industry, plus 24/7 customer support and product specialists always ready to answer any questions. Call or visit Grainger.com. Right, as promised, we're joined right now by a reporter for Fox Sports and FS1. He is a writer for The Athletic as well, a New York Times bestselling author. His most recent book is The QB. I'm talking about Bruce Feldman. Bruce, it is so good to have you on. In fact, Bruce, it's been a minute or two since we've caught up, so how are you and everybody around you right now?
I'm doing well, thanks, Jim. You know, just trying to be optimistic as everything that's going on around us. So, you know, we've got... You know, it's been obviously for a lot, I mean, for everybody, it's been just a crazy last 3 months, but I appreciate you asking.
You got it, Bruce. Good to have you back. Now, listen, you wrote a piece last month where you spoke with Reggie Bush about the NCAA punishment and his emotions surrounding that. Before we get into the conversation itself, what was your reaction when USC announced that the 10 years of disassociation was over?
You know, I wasn't surprised because it had been trending that direction for a little while, and I think there have been some things that had gone on behind the scenes with really the new leadership at USC, and that's Carol Folt, the president, Mike Bone, the new AD, and his team around him. So I know there have been some Zoom calls. I know that Matt Leiner, who was obviously Reggie's quarterback when they were winning so many games, had really helped kind of bridge this, and I think it's something that I think – you know, certainly Reggie had wanted back when that story you're referencing, you know, for The Athletic, we had talked about, I said, I probably talked with Reggie, I don't know, a half dozen times over the course of a week to, you know, getting into that story. It wasn't just about NIL. That's where it started out to be. But then it went into the NCAA and as well as his feelings on a lot of subjects, especially what went on at USC. So I think, you know, there was some movement from that point on from about a month ago. And I just think that a lot of people around USC and inside USC looked and go, hey, it's way past time. We need to do this. And I think given the climate of everything going on around college athletics, I think it just made a lot of sense.
Bruce Feldman's my guest. So Bruce, when you spoke to him, how would you describe his thoughts and his emotions? For instance, how much of a toll has this taken on him?
A lot more than I think probably most people realize. You know, obviously he was like a phenomenon when he was in college football and they were winning and, you know, obviously a huge media market here in Southern California. And then he goes to the Saints. And I think there were times where he was injured. There were times where I think he was struggling. I think a lot of that weighed on him, you know, from talking to him for that story, it was a rough roller coaster ride for him, because one of the things that Reggie had told me was, when you're, you know, because I'd asked him about kind of when you blow up as a player and all of a sudden now you go to stadiums and you see people are wearing your jersey and when do you realize you're kind of a commodity? And he said that the hardest thing is when you realize that people close to you sometimes are the ones who you have to watch out for the most. And that's a tough lesson to learn, he said, because, you know, compliance people or coaches can tell you, hey, you know, you got to watch out for boosters, or you got to watch out for agents or whatnot. But when it's the people who you think you can trust and that goes, you know, in the wrong direction, it really can be unsettling. And I think that was really, really hard on him. I mean, some of the depths and details of things we talked about, I would, you know, leave up to him to, if he wants to reveal at a later point. But I think it was definitely, it was eye-opening for me to hear some of that from him and some of the details of it, just because it's not something that I think most people had assumed, because you're like, hey, you're looking at this guy, he's married with three kids and he's on TV and he had a, you know, 10-year career and he, you know, he won a Super Bowl, and I know that was great for him, for, you know, to help the rebuilding and the healing around Katrina for that community around New Orleans. But there was a lot of other stuff that went to it. And, you know, I think some of this is tied into, you know, when you have a value system a little bit that is the way it's set up. And he talked about when he first, you know, he's telling me how he really came to love football. And part of the reason that he explained it was he wanted his biological father to see him and wanted him to come around more. And just like that was some of the things that he saw as a little kid, to use football to do that. And so when you start hearing that, you could say, okay, you know, I could see how your trust issues and even some of your value system can get skewed when that's how you see it. And then all of a sudden you're kind of watching how you come up through the system and how you can feel like a commodity and how you can kind of look at the world through that lens.
Yeah, to your point, Bruce, I don't think too many people on the outside look at him and think like that. You'd have no idea. But, of course, we have no idea what these guys are going through. We really don't know these guys that well. But then when you have a conversation like that, you get a better understanding. And then you look at an era right now, Bruce, where everything is very different. Like, you could look at what happened, the choices that he made back then, and they look and feel much different now because everything has changed. For instance, if there had been an open market for his name, his image, and his likeness at that time, when you consider the success that USC was having and the fact that he was playing in Los Angeles, the fact that he had this style of play that was just electric, what kind of money could he have been looking at in terms of compensation back then?
Yeah, that's one of the things that was really fascinating to work on. In that story, I talked to the CEO of Navigate, which is a sports business strategy firm, and they're the experts kind of in this field. And I said, okay, can you project what Reggie Bush would have made? And as you said, huge media market, style of play, they were on top of the world, you know, in sports. They were just a bigger deal than what you're seeing even now, as great of quarterbacks as like a Joe Burrow was last year, or Trevor Lawrence, or it's a different level of reach and range that he could have commanded. They estimated, and this is by their best viewpoint, that he could have made $2 to $3 million at the time of his USC career. Now, what's crazy about that is pre-social media. Reggie Bush has like 3 million Twitter followers now. We're not even talking about Twitter followers or any of that stuff, which you can project now to what athletes may have and what they could try to leverage. This is even before really social media. They said Reggie Bush could have made $2 to $3 million, and that would have been what he could have commanded from apparel deals, beverage deals, supplement companies, maybe local businesses, say like furniture stores or things of that nature. And that doesn't even get into then the appearance component, which is the thing right now. The NCAA is trying to figure that out. Like, let's say that some, you know, donor decides, hey, I want to spend $50,000 to have Reggie Bush come to my kid's birthday party just because I want, you know, all my neighbors to be jealous. I mean, if Reggie Bush does 10 of those appearances, that's $500,000. That's, you know, money that, as you know, brought that up back to Reggie as for the story. And he said, he goes, that is mind blowing. That's like life changing money. With the money that we're talking about, you know, in the other context where it's $3,000 or $5,000 here or there, he goes, yeah, that helps pay the bills and that takes some pressure off. But when you're talking about $500,000, you see everything else, everybody else is making money off of you. He said that in retrospect, you know, is such a game changer to think of it through that prism.
We're talking to Bruce Feldman. I absolutely agree with that. Now, Clemson and Utah, Bruce, have been dealing with allegations of staff members using racial slurs in the past. Iowa appears to have a much larger issue, with player after player expressing concerns about the strength coach, Chris Doyle, assistant coach Brian Ferentz as well, and the overall culture of that program. What do you make of the situation, Bruce, with the Hawkeyes?
I think that's the one that is honestly the most volatile, because you've had so many players come out and speak out on social media. It started James Daniels, who was a really good player for Iowa a few years ago, is now in the NFL, had broached the subject, and a lot of players have spoken up with their own anecdotes and stories, and just so many. I mean, it's not like it's been five or six. It's been over 40 who have come forward. Most of the allegations stem in mistreatment along racial lines. There's some other ones that are also just straight up bullying stories of that. And I think what they're doing now is, there's been Iowa has tried or is trying to really sort all this out, with having some former players as point people on getting to the bottom of what really happened. I think the biggest thing you're hearing from them is, hey, we know some things were not handled appropriately. We know that this culture did not treat everyone fairly or appropriately. And how can we get better from this? And that's one of the things. Now, you know, Chris Doyle has come out on put on social media that he denies these allegations. And so we'll see what gets determined or found in the conclusions that they come of this. But again, there's been more allegations that have surfaced even since the suspension. And it's going to be interesting to see what direction things go there. I mean, Kirk Ferentz has been there a long time, as you mentioned. His son Brian he's not on leave. His son Brian's the offensive coordinator there. There was a few allegations, tied to him. Most of them are tied to the strength coach, but there's a few other assistants who are referenced in some of these things. And there's a lot to clean out, and there's a lot to clean up, and especially when you have so many players who really feel like they've been treated unfairly. And a lot of those players who've spoken out, not all, but a lot of them, were guys who actually had a lot of success there. And there's also some of their white teammates have also, feel like they've really got a lot more listening to do, and seem to have a lot of remorse about how things have been handled for so long there. And I think Kirk Ferentz is in that same boat, talking about, clearly they didn't do enough to listen to some of these concerns in the past.
Bruce Feldman joining me for another moment or so. Bruce, last topic really quickly. You've got a piece up about UCLA, where Chip Kelly is entering his third season. He's got 17 losses in his first 2 years. That's 10 more than he had in his first 4 years at Oregon. Is it a case where maybe college football caught up to him, or is this more of a rebuilding job than people first thought?
I think it's more the latter. I mean, look, if you look at Mike Leach when he took over Washington State, they struggled his first 3 seasons there, and people are like, okay, everyone caught up to what he's doing because it's more permeated. Now, what's different about Leach than Chip Kelly is Chip Kelly has really changed a lot of what he's doing schematically compared to Leach is still the air raid guy. But I think a lot of what has affected Chip Kelly was they have not had good depth. I think he's really kind of had to flip the roster. You talk to people inside the program, they are very optimistic. They think they have a budding star in Dorian Thompson-Robinson, who's a junior quarterback they feel like he's ready to have a breakout year, and they're going to need it because they're going to need him. They're going to need the offensive line, which they feel like they finally have some depth in the receiving core. I'm not sure how good they're going to be on defense, but one thing that also bodes well for them is their non-conference schedule, which has been brutal his first 2 years, is much more manageable, and maybe they can get some momentum going and build off and maybe get to 8 wins, which I think people would see as a lot of growth and a big step in the right direction there.
And then finally, Bruce, I had a conversation with Mack Brown earlier in the program. We talked about the fact that his first group of players are returning tomorrow. What do you make of how schools and programs are dealing with COVID-19 and the return of players to campus?
I think by and large, the ones that are almost everyone is testing. There's a few schools that I'm not sure if their protocols are the same. And I think the question is going to be, it seems like there's a low risk when you're talking about college age players, especially the ones, in the conditioning. The question I think that people are trying to sort out is what happens to the staff and some of the people who are maybe 55 and up. Maybe they have their health, their conditioning isn't ideal. It's what's going to be the case for some of those folks, because I think one of the things I've talked, having talked to a lot of coaches around the country now, is there are pretty much two or three or four guys on every staff that fit into that risk category. I mean, do those guys just, they're not going to quarantine, or I don't think, at least maybe there will be a few cases of that. But look, I mean, Mac Brown is himself is close to 70. Frank Solich is mid-70s. There's plenty of coaches who are over 60 and probably not in as good shape as physically as some of those guys. I think those are the ones that people are going to be most, you know, most concerned about in this. And, you know, then the big question is going to be, will we have full stands or not? You know, this is, to me, you know, people are going to see what happens a month from now, where we are with the virus. Hopefully, there will not be the risk that I think a lot of people fear there will be. But right now, I think the best they can do is listen to the experts around them and try to, you know, try to practice as much smart precautionary stuff as they can with their protocols and procedures in place, because I think there's going to be a lot of contingencies that right now they hope they don't have to get into in potential worst-case scenarios. But I think those are, you know, on some of the people's minds as they're kind of just now getting into this.
He is a reporter for Fox Sports and FS1, a writer for The Athletic, a New York Times bestselling author, and his most recent book is The QB. Bruce Feldman, my guest. Great job, Bruce. Always good to have you on the show, and good to get caught up, Bruce.
Always a pleasure, Jim. Take care.
Thanks. You too, Bruce. Bruce Feldman. All right, so looking ahead to hour number three, good information from him, as always. When we come back, today's player profile, the last player profile prior to the Smack-Off itself. The Smack-Off is a week from tomorrow. Smack-Off 26, invite only, $5,000 to the winner. The defending champ gets his profile next. The BIC, Brad in Corona. Meantime, I've done my three interviews. Phone lines are wide open. Now is the time to call 1-800-636-8686. The BIC's profile is next. Hit me up on Twitter also at Jim Rome, and you can email us directly at Rome, R-O-M-E, at Habitake.com.